हरि ओ गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Page 19, Lesson 9. Krishna is perceived by the transcendentalists in his three transcendental features, namely, 1. Impersonal Brahman, 1427, 2. His plenary portion, Paramatma, 1517, and 3. Purushottama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, 1518, 1427. And I am the basis of the impersonal Brahman, which is immortal, imperishable, and eternal, and is the constitutional position of ultimate happiness. So, constitutional position of ultimate happiness, it means the position that one's situated in. The Brahman platform is the position that one functions from. It doesn't mean that's the realization. That means that's the situation. Right? It means someone's in a situation. Now what they do with that situation, that's defined by their consciousness. Right? But you're in a situation. Right? So the thing is Brahman is the situation of the transcendentalist. That's the environment. Because Brahman represents Sat. Right, the eternality principle. Right, so it's here: immortal, imperishable, and eternal. It's sat. Right, so then you have chit, which will be the activities. Ananda. Then what is the goal of the relationship? Right. So sat is the position. So one is situated on the transcendental platform. Right. So in other words, the existence of everything, that's Brahman. Brahman is manifesting that. Then the activities within that. Then the chit potency is manifesting that. Then the prema that one experiences from that interaction with Krishna, that's Ananda's manifesting. Right? But they're different, but at the same time, non-different. You don't look at all the different things. They all go together. Does that make sense? The Brahman conception of life is the first stage in self-realization. The constitution of Brahman is immortality, imperishability, eternity, and happiness. Right? This happiness means Ananda as just the self-satisfaction that is there. Just, you know, there's no material difficulty, so the soul on its own naturally is just happy. Right? But then in the interactive state, then that becomes prema. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization. So then if you're coming from the material platform, it's where it starts. Because that's actual existence. Right? Self-realization means you're situating yourself in actual existence. Right? Material means it's illusory. So when we say, again, when we're saying material, we're not meaning the external energy. No, that's just external energy. It's an inferior Brahman. So even the materialist, everyone here is situated in Brahman, just they don't know it, so they're an illusion. And the Brahman they're situated in is inferior to the Brahman in the spiritual world. Right? That's superior Brahman. Right? Just like the Jiva is very minute Brahman, and Krishna is unlimited Brahman. Right? So there's four kinds of Brahman. Does that make sense? Like that. So, we're not meaning that. We're meaning that in the inability to see that Brahman is the actual position of existence. So we don't think it's that. We think it's our own mental speculation our own desire for sense gratification to lord it over the material energy. So that's how we define material. So spiritual life begins by understanding, no, everything is Brahman, everything is transcendental. Right? The soul is transcendental, the Lord's energies are transcendental, and the Lord is the supreme transcendental. That's where it starts. Right? So then you're actually situated. That's why then you're eternally situated. Well, here, because we don't understand that we're situated in Brahman, then we go through the identity of the temporariness of the material world. So as it changes, then our identity, our situation, everything change. So then our life is temporary. Right? So therefore material. But the soul's eternal. So it's just a birth after birth after birth. So he's going on, he's eternal. Material energy is always there, but the manifestations are temporary. Right? That's because we identify with it. So our existence then, even though we're situated in Brahman, our consciousness is not, so our experience is not that of Brahman. It's not eternal and happy. It's temporary and ever-changing. Does that make sense? Right? So the first step in transcendental realization is understanding actually how we're situated. That we're not actually materially situated. That's just our consciousness. We're actually situated in Brahman. Right? Inferior Brahman. So if the soul understands that, then that will be his situation. If he understands that this Brahman is Krishna, and the relationship is with Krishna as a person, then he becomes situated in the superior Brahman, right, in the spiritual world. Does that make sense? Because the Brahma Jyoti is in between. The Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of that superior Brahman, right? You know, of Krishna and of the spiritual world, right? There's no Brahma Jyoti coming from the material world. Right? You know what I'm saying? The soul is brilliant, but it's, you know, covered, so you don't really appreciate it. You know, somebody's happy or smiling, you get a little bit more something, but otherwise not so much. Yes.
So this is why some very self-realized souls, they can be very almost effulgent because they're not so covered.
That means their consciousness is there. Yeah, it means covered meaning by consciousness, not covered meaning that their material bodies are thinner or something.
But it's like sometimes you see these great souls and
That's all. It's just that you're seeing the transcendental, the effulgence of the quality.
Yeah.
That's all. So, yeah. Does that make sense? But it's their consciousness, therefore it's consistent. Otherwise, an individual might at some point be very happy or very something, so there's a lot of energy there, but it's temporary. But that energy is still Krishna's Brahman, but it's just going through them. Yeah. Yes?
I want to clarify, you say that Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Supreme Brahman. I always thought it was the effulgence of the personal Bhagavan aspect of Krishna.
Supreme Brahman?
Well, but that's why superior Brahman, does that include all the Vaikuntha planets and...
Yeah. It means the spiritual world is also self-effulgent.
Uh-huh.
But Krishna is, you know, supreme amongst that. But it's his potency, mm-hmm. right? It means, in other words, we're bringing out these aspects so we can understand, one is break down our material concept of relationship, and to two, establish the spiritual concept of relationship. But when you're actually functioning on the spiritual platform in relationship, no one worries about sambit sandini hladini. Mm-hmm. That's not a consideration. Right? It's just because it's one thing. It's different, but it's all working together to establish one thing. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Then the superior and inferior, is this synonymous with Bahiranga Shakti and Antaranga?
Yes, it's the same. Okay. Right. Or the material manifestation and the spiritual manifestation. So the material manifestation is made out of inferior, the Bahiranga Shakti. But so it itself is eternal. But the manifestations of it are according to the desires of the living entity, so according to their karma. So that's always temporary. Right? So its manifestation is temporary, but it itself is eternal. Right?
Yeah. Maharaj, here it's clear for us that we are already in Brahman, but we keep thinking we have to go to Brahman. It's the consciousness.
Yes, because we always think in time and space. That's the material conditioning. You know, that's the thing. So also in there, then, that's why we will categorize Brahman and Paramatma realizations as realizations within the material situation. Because in the spiritual world, there's no Brahman or Paramatma realization, because it's Bhagavan. So Bhagavan includes the others. Right? So space is Brahman, and time is Paramatma. You know what I'm saying? Because it's activity. So he's in control, he sanctions all, it's working under his direction. So we think according to time and space. Therefore, then, we will look at the Lord in these two ways. That's inherently how we'll look. We have to be... means it's with training that we would look that way, but it's only by the guidance coming down from the spiritual world that we'll understand Bhagavan, because in the material concept, time and space is all we can accommodate. So something beyond time and space, that we can't accommodate. Does that make sense? So that's why we'll always think in those things, because that means your forms and your activities. Mm-hmm. Right? But, you know, the ananda that comes from the interaction and all that's coming from the Lord. Right? The forms and activities are his potency. Right? You know, the original being the internal potency, that's reflected as the external. Is this what I'm saying? Yes.
Space is Brahman, time is Paramatma.
Means those are our connections with those two, because Brahman is all pervading, all this, all that. Paramatma is in control of what's happening, so we're able to grasp those more easily because of our conditioning of time and space. You understand? The point is not that Paramatma is time. That means Krishna is time and space. But what I'm saying is we're able to grasp these two more easily. Like you can take a karma and talk about Brahman or talk about Paramatma, and they'll catch it like this. But you talk about Bhagavan, you know, he's a person that they can catch, but that, you know, he's in control, but at the same time he's beyond, he's entered everything, but he's not. These things are difficult for him. That's why you end up with all these different religions and philosophies, because they can't accommodate Bhagavan.
So it is achinta bheda bheda that is not able to understand.
Yeah, like that. It means that's the easiest way, the most complete way to understand it. Otherwise, there's it means through the other Vaishnava philosophies you can understand Bhagavan. Right? So it brings one to the platform of pure devotional service, right? One comes to the platform of prema. But beyond prema, then there's the element of achinta veda veda tattva. Right? Because it's not 10 stages of prema. So what we know is prema is the second. First is bhava, then prema. Right? Bhava is the bud, then prema is open. Then after that, then you have all these others, you know, sneha and rati and man and all anurag, rag, like this. So those are manifest in these other relationships, but the how you say the neutrality and servitorship is prema, but then when it goes above that, then it's I mean when you get into friendship, parental, and that, then these other stages manifest. So that then you require these other aspects. Yes.
It seems like a lot of these concepts are like a no-brainer. So the reason why we are able to understand is simply because we got Krishna's mercy. Krishna is allowing us to understand.
Yes, yes.
Due to service and
yes. Yes. Yeah.
So I'm still struggling. Brahma Jyoti is in between the superior and the inferior.
Not exactly. I mean, that's where we'll say the Brahma Jyoti is. But it's all Brahman.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So the Brahma Jyoti is also all pervading, because it's the effulgence of the good qualities of these superior manifestations, right? The Lord and his internal potency. You know, so specifically that means it's Krishna's effulgence. You know what I'm saying? Because he and his energy are non-different. Right? So the manifestation of Krishna, that's through his yoga maya. Right? Because one could say, no, but it's just him. No, it's through his yoga maya. Because he and his energy are non-different. Why is he this size? He could be bigger. He could be smaller. So that is manifested that size so that you can perceive that's then his yoga maya's internal potency. Because he is the whole creation. Otherwise, how is it Mother Shoda can't put the rope around him? You can't put the rope around unlimited. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's actually. But by yoga maya, then he's just that size. Right? Because that's the relation. That's how you're dealing with him. If you're dealing with him as the greatest, the most unlimited, this, then he manifests like that. That's how yoga maya will manifest. So according to the relationship, that's how he manifests. So, yes.
Thinking of that statement that the Brahma Jyoti is all-pervading, I've heard the statement that the jiva, which is in that merged, we've heard but we never actually, by contemplating activities on the spiritual world, desires to come back to austerities and elevate itself.
Why would they contemplate the spiritual world?
From the reading, it seemed that by seeing activity and they were not in activity, they would...
No, but their experience, that means you're in the Brahma Jyoti, so there's no senses, there's only consciousness. So there's nothing to perceive. You know what I'm saying? So when they want to be active, the only activity that they have experience of is material. So they'll again come back to the material world. It means there is the element that the demons killed by Krishna, when they want to be active, they could think of Krishna as activity. And then in that way go to Vaikuntha. Does that make sense? But, you know, it's not guaranteed, but it's probably a good chance. Because you're on the purified platform, so if you had material activities and spiritual, you'd be attracted to the spiritual. So there's a good chance that they will, but that's only the demons killed by Krishna. So, you know what I'm saying? So it's not dynamic. It's not like the way to go. Because if you look at it, some of these big demons, they're devotees. So that it doesn't necessarily leave. You know, all the really big ones, those are devotees, Jayan Vijaya. You know, and others are just there. So there's no guarantee that you could be demoniac enough that the Lord would personally come and kill you. Right? So it's not recommended as a path. So therefore sadhana bhakti is, right? So it's not that they would go from there. Right? It means we're saying from the heavenly planets, then they could perform devotional service because they're devotees. The demigods are devotees. So they could continue, but that means then you just get gradually elevated through the levels of you know, the heavenly life until you get to Brahma Loka. Right? Because you have citizenry demigods. Then you have those in charge of small departments like winking or something like that, you know, or itching earlobe. You know, or something, you know, it's 33 million of them. So they like that, you know, then you get to the ones that are actually controlling, you know, the big, you know, air and light and, you know, all the, you know, the big ones. Then you have Indra. So right there, that's four levels. Right? Does that make sense? Then you have, you know, your tapasvis, your meditators, you have your prajapatis, you have your yogis. So there's a lot of levels that are there, you know. Does that make sense? So you have to get up to there. And also, it starts down on Pitri Loka. So you have your Pitris, right? Then you have, you know, above that. So there's quite a few levels. But basically you could say the Pitris, than the, you know, citizenries, than the ones that have, you know, karmendriyas, they manage, you know, different things like that. Then the lokapals, the ones that manage, you know, the bigger managers. Then Indra, right? Then the how you say, great sages, the prajapatis, like that. So that's seven layers right there. So it just means you move up gradually through those. And then you finally get to Brahma Loka, and then from Brahma Loka, when Brahma, at the end of Brahma's life, when Brahma goes back to Godhead, you can go with him. Does that make sense?
If you were in Brahma Loka, but you did not have that consciousness.
But you didn't have the consciousness. You're a yogi. So then, you know, you go to whatever situation would be appropriate for your consciousness. You might even be the most pious person there, but not devotee, and then be born as Brahma. Right? So now if you become a devotee as Brahma, then great, you go back to Godhead. If you don't, then depending upon that, generally speaking, from Brahma, the tendency is to go down. Hmm. You know, so then Prajapatis, great sages, and then, you know, until you get to the Indra-gopa. Yeah, to the other various...
Till you get to the local news.
Yeah, like that, yeah. You know, the guy with the chainsaw, right? Yes.
Maharaj, I've always been curious about Mother Bhumi and her entourage, where she resides. Is she...
I mean, where she specifically resides, that I don't know. I'm not sure. But she is. This is Bhumi. This is her. And then there'll be, you know, a specific person. Like that. She can take that form. Okay. The constitution of Brahman is immortality, imperishability, eternity, and happiness. Brahman is the beginning of transcendental realization. Because then you actually have realization that we're not the body, we're not the material energy, you know, we're not the activities or anything, we're the soul, right? So that's Brahman. And the material energy is a form of Brahman. Right? So this idea that it's something to control and enjoy is illusory, right? So therefore, coming to the understanding of Brahman, realization, that's the beginning of transcendental realization. Paramatma, the Supersoul, is the middle, the second stage in transcendental realization. Right? Because then you see God's activities, His control, you know, His supremacy, like that. And the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate realization of the Absolute Truth. Because then He is a person. Right? The other is His office. You know, what you could say is His duties as Godhead. Though He has no duties, but He does it out of His own pleasure. Right? Therefore, both Paramatma and the impersonal Brahman are within the Supreme Person. It is explained in the seventh chapter, right, that material nature is the manifestation of the inferior energy of the Supreme Lord. So, material nature is a manifestation of the inferior energy. Right? So, your material is coming from this inferior energy. Right? So, its manifestation is what we would call the material world. What it's made out of is made out of inferior Brahman. But why it's manifest in that way is because some jiva has the conditioning that they want to see the material nature and relate to it in that way. You understand? That's why the manifestation is there. You know, you have a you know, house in the hills around Los Angeles because that's what you want. Otherwise, it wouldn't be manifest. The original people that lived there, who'd want to live up there? You know, the water's down on the ground, and that's where everything that you need is. You know what I'm saying? So nobody's going to live up there. You know what I'm saying? But you want, so then it goes in that way, and it becomes then the thing, it becomes the thing. Right? The Lord impregnates the inferior material energy with fragments of the superior nature. And that is the spiritual touch in the material nature. Right. So fragments means the living entities and His potencies. But as Krishna mentioned before, it's just a fragment. It's not actually very much. So if we say a fragment, what would that indicate? Why would you use fragment rather than a...
Comparing to the spiritual world is just as much.
Yes, but even let's say compared to something small.
It's a part of something small.
Yeah, it means generally something that a fragment is part of something. So it's not even itself very much. You know what I'm saying? So by using the term fragment, it makes it even smaller. You know, the understanding. So that's the idea. Mm. So it's a fragment of it. So the jivas themselves are very small. So then they're part. But then his potency to actually run the place. Means if you have a jiva, it's 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. How much potency do you need to impress him? Right? Not a lot. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't take hardly anything to manifest and run this material energy so that it is impressive to the jiva, right, in his conditioned state. But the full manifestation is in the spiritual world, because then one's working on the eternal platform, so then one can deal, so then, you know, a much greater position can be appreciated. When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. Right? So in other words, it's not that you think Krishna is Brahman. It's you rise up to the Brahman conception by everything's Brahman. But that Brahman's from Krishna. Otherwise, we think everything's a material energy, and then there's Krishna. No, it's Brahman, and that's coming from Krishna. It's part of Krishna. So then, because the point is if it's material energy, do you have a shot at controlling and enjoying it? Yes or no? Because material means illusory concept. So yeah, it's fair game. It's open season. You know, it's for you. You know, so whoever can get what out of it, you know, that's the way it goes. If somebody has more, hey, he did better. You know? But if it's all Brahman, and it's all transcendental, and it's non-different from the Lord, what's your shot at enjoying it?
Zero.
Nothing.
Zero.
Right? Yeah. Means that if you want to, then you will have to be covered by the external energy, so that you think it's enjoyable. Does that make sense? So we're situating ourselves on the Brahman platform. It's not, and so therefore, we have Brahman realization. But it's complete because we know it's the beginning stage of the complete realization of Bhagavan. So we're even seeing the Brahman as connected to Krishna, the person, right?
Could we also infer that there is complete happiness in every situation if we realize that everything is Brahman? Because we know
not complete happiness, there's happiness. Okay. Right? Complete happiness is seeing in connection to Krishna. See, in the material world, there's no happiness.
Mm. Just glimpses.
Glimpses, that means we come to the neutral state. Mm. So the neutral state, there's that happiness, but it's not actual, because it's not eternal, because happiness should be eternal. Yeah. Then you build on that. But the point in the material world is that there is a problem. You remove the problem, so it comes to the neutral state. We call that happiness. Right? There's a problem. You're hungry. We remove that. We come to the neutral state. We're happy. Right? Then we create another problem. We eat too much and we overeat. Then, you know, stomach's heavy or drowsy. So then when that comes to the neutral state, then we're happy. You know, so in other words, it's always just coming to the neutral state. So the neutral state is where happiness is. Right? So then you have disturbance, then you have the neutral state, which is happiness. So then, real happiness, complete, that's prema. That's another thing. Does that make sense? Yes.
This element you just mentioned, to see the material world separate, is the
little, deism. A little louder.
this element of seeing the material energy separate from Krishna.
Yes.
Is the deism, which you mentioned before?
Yeah, that would give rise to deism and all that. It's because we think it's different. So, because heroes were in control, or even like devotees say, well, Prabhupada's, you know, from the spiritual world, so they want to give full credit. Mm-hmm. But he's not from this world, so he doesn't really know this world very good. Mm-hmm. So he'll make mistakes when it comes to, you know, material management and political and, you know, how this world functions, you know. So we're the experts at that. So we should be saying how we're going to apply Krishna consciousness within this world. So you deified Prabhupada. It's like saying, yes, the person's from the real world, right? And, you know, he's therefore very glorious in that, and he knows how, you know, movement and shapes, all that works. But he's not from the reflection in the mirror, so he doesn't actually understand how the mirror works. Right? That's the amount of intelligence that's being applied here. The logic's being applied. So that's deism. The point is if you know the real, you know the reflection. You know what I'm saying? By saying you can't figure out the reflection means what? It's like if a human looks in the water, what does he see?
Himself.
Okay. Now, let's say, I think if a monkey looks in the water, right, they may see himself. I think porpoises also know it's themselves. But most animals, when they look in the mirror, they think it's another animal. Okay? So then actually, even though they think they're glorifying Prabhupada, what are they actually saying?
Calling him an animal.
He's calling him an animal. That's all. So that's the thing, is that we're trying to glorify, but we're not.
That went bad.
Yeah. Or about, you see, as the acharyas, when they're writing, and about Shishupal, even though he's acting in the form of a demon, he's actually a devotee. So all those 100 insults that he hurled at Krishna at the Rajasuya sacrifice, the acharyas went through it and broke them all down and showed that they were actually glorification. So this is the difference. Yes. So we should be careful. Yes.
What is happiness question? What about something like dessert? After the meal is done, is there a neutral state? And then like the ice cream or the cake or whatever, is that extra bit of happiness?
But if you were full, could you eat it?
Yes.
Well, it's a matter of how you define full. No, yeah, because I mean, it's a matter of full meaning according to what's recommended by Ayurveda. It means half, stomach is half full, quarter air, quarter water, and you're satisfied. Then there's the Brahmacharya's definition, which means there is absolutely no physical possible way of sticking any more food, you know, into your mouth and swallowing it. You might get it in your mouth, but you won't be able to
walk around with it for half an hour.
Yeah, yeah. And also, generally speaking, when it gets to that point, there's no taste anymore. So there's no inspiration. Like that. You know, in other words, it might be clinically dangerous. But, you know, you're young and it works. You know. Yes.
Maharaj, just going back a little bit, I just have heard, you said that we have to be careful that sometimes if we're glorifying Prabhupada, we're not. We're calling him an animal. Is that what I hear?
No. Yeah. means in connection with that point where a devotee was, you know, heard to be explaining why we don't want to, it's like we don't want, means the thing is, you know, Prabhupada recommended certain kinds of dress and certain kinds of food and certain kinds of cultural aspects, and they don't want to make it look bad towards Prabhupada, so they say he's from the spiritual world, so, you know, there you can do all that, but here we're in the material world, so being from the spiritual world, he doesn't really know the material world very good because he's so elevated, right? And so, therefore, he doesn't really know that here you have to wear pants and shirts and, you know, eat a vegetarian burger and, you know, stuff like that. You know, and then that's actually how the material world functions. And so, that's technically, you know, philosophically called deism, you know, where the person is transcendental and spiritual and all that and glorious, but they have no connection with the material phenomena. So material phenomena functions on its own, separate from the Lord. Right? So therefore, it's up to us to use our intelligence how to best apply it. So in other words, we decide what's right and wrong. So it comes back to Vox Populi. Right? So in other words, your modern, your higher aspect of your modern you know, social, economic, philosophical, you know, kind of dealings is actually deism. It means you're generally in history, many of your biggest successful persons with the material nature who were also religious, they were deists. Because the ones who are too religious, you know, then it's like, well, it's up to God, so then, you know, they don't endeavor as hard. But these deists, they know if I don't endeavor, it's not going to happen. That's their thought. So they work very, very hard. So it's very, very popular. I think especially Age of Enlightenment, I think that ushered in this whole deistic kind of thing. Because before that, it was just faith in God and he'd take care and all that. But then it's a matter of how do you say? You know, it's no, you know, faith is in our hands. Right? So, you know, it's just that you don't have it. So it'll be more grossly manifest in the non-Vedic. Because in the Vedic, they're all, no, God's in control. There's no technical, really much of the deistic area. It's very mild. The Western is very strong. Because they don't know how to explain that if God's all good, why is there bad things happening here? And even if there's bad things happening here, of course, it's happening to bad people who've done bad stuff. But why is bad stuff happening to nice people? My son was nice. You know, why did he die in a car accident? You know? And then the man next door, he's such a nasty old man, and you know, he's still, you know, going strong at 80 years old. And they're still drinking and smoking and cursing and, you know, everything like that. You know, so, you know, and his dogs bother me also. So why is it, you know, he's, you know, like that, and my son who is so sweet and nice and everybody loved him, and, you know, his you know, in school, his teachers, all his relatives, anybody who knew, everybody loved, why did he die? So because of this, then they have to, because they have some faith, they don't want to say it's God's fault, because it can't be their fault or the kid's fault, because they have no idea about karma. So, therefore, to avoid God being at fault, well, God doesn't actually control the world. So there's other powers of control. So then you have to, then who is that person who controls? Then you have to give rise to, you know, the devil. Does that make sense? So this is all just a line of thought, because they don't understand how God is non-different and the world is manifest according to your desire and your karma. You know, you have a desire, but according to your previous actions, you get, you know, your present. So because of lacking that, then they come up with all these kind of things. So then that gives rise to the normal person just somehow or another making it through life. But the clever person, then he can take advantage of that and take control of the material situation in his mind.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's a very materialistic concept, but devotees will say that. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying all devotees, but the point that I've made is something that has been said by devotees. Because they want to wear their karmic clothes, they want to eat their Western diet, and they want to be, in other words, whatever is their country that they're from. They want to feel comfortable that being, you know, purely following the culture of their upbringing, that it is perfectly all right, and all these Vedic kind of things don't apply. You know, they'll accept the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, but not the religion of Krishna consciousness. So they want to maintain their own religion, but add the philosophy of Krishna consciousness.
It's about being in control.
Yes, it's about being in control.
Staying in control.
It's about control and attachment, because I'm attached to, you know, the particular dress or the particular social position I have because of that. And, you know, so it works. But it's not seen that. So many people use their ethnic, you know, it's, would, let us say, you do have a position on the board, right? You're strong. Now let's say the person is of African-American ethnicity, okay? Now what happens if one day he decided to show up in an African tribal outfit? You know, the cloth, the big things with the zigzaggies and the hat. Would anybody on the board make any comment? Right? Good chance no. Right? Good chance, no. What if the guy was Muslim and he showed up in, you know, and it was a lady and she showed up in a burqa? Would anybody say anything? Probably not. But we have this idea, if we show up, you know, dressed as a Hare Krishna, then, you know, nobody will accept. It can't function, it can't work, it can't this, it can't that. It's just a matter of if you can pull it off or not, that's all. And most of the things that the models walk down the runway, nobody can pull off, you know, like that. But how do they do it? Because they have, they're comfortable. So it's a matter, okay, if they're uncomfortable, fine. They only feel comfortable wearing that because of the particular attachments either to the clothes itself or to the particular social, social interactiveness that it affords, or maybe due to just they're not very good with clothes and they stay on because they're well buttoned and well riveted, you know, like that. And you know, they got into good shop, so the cut's basically fairly good, though they don't really know necessarily so much about it, you know, why it works, but, you know, it's okay, they like it, and people think they look okay. Okay, so, okay, that's fine, but don't make a philosophy. Just know I'm attached in this way, so therefore I'm doing. Just like, to be a grihastha, you don't have to make a philosophy that it's okay. It's already part of the philosophy. So to make a separate philosophy, no, it's okay, you know, but as you see the grihastha say, no, but, you know, brahmacharis, they're only pretending and they're not being real, and, you know, grihasthas are being real about their knees and stuff like this and that. Yeah, it's real. The soul needs some dead matter to call your own. You know, this is my dead matter, you know. This dead matter is my castle, you know. And if anybody comes here, I'm going to shoot them, right, you know. So, you know, like that. So is that, it's already worked in. It's already worked in. So, but the point is what we don't want to accept is, yes, I want to be able to function in my attachments, but I don't want it to be looked at that is less advanced. So therefore, I'll make up a philosophy that looks like I'm very advanced because I'm presenting it philosophically, like that, using all kinds of nice words and stuff. And so my rhetoric's good. Not logic, my rhetoric is good. So therefore, people buy it. And so now I'm in a good position in society. I'm an advanced devotee, and I'm materially situated how I like. Hey, win-win. You know, it's all good. But the problem is this philosophy then is actually detrimental towards others' performance of devotional service because and their own, because it is an attachment and they have to come to a neutral state. Even if they never change their dress or never change their food for their whole life in Krishna consciousness, that they're attached to it, that's going to get in the way. Right? If you happen to be in Poland and the only thing available is Polish food, so that's what you eat. But then to make up a philosophy that, no, it's good to eat and you must eat and this and that, then that's not quite so good. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yes. And the Manu says, if you preach the wrong philosophy, you get 100 reactions.
So yes, you get 100 times the reaction.
So that's the
it means to follow a bogus philosophy, you get the reaction for following it. But if you preach it, you get 100 times the reaction for following it. So therefore, better to not make up your own philosophy. Not good.
This is deism.
That's a form of deism. There may be so many other bogus philosophies, but I'm just bringing up the deistic. It's not that I'm attached to my own conditioning and I'm making up a philosophy for that. That's deism. But saying that God and his representative aren't actually what's... It's Kali Yuga, therefore God has no control. Or, you know, it's Kali Yuga, Prabhupada's, you know, from Satya Yuga, so he doesn't know. Or, you know, or he's from India, what does he know? He's from Calcutta. You know, it's like he makes... The only ones that could keep up with him probably would be, you know, as a city... Well, probably a few. New Yorkers could keep up. Just keep up, but they won't still be as good. It means we see that how he would work in New York, he'd get them running around. Like that. A few other places. The guys on the street, I'm sure that the guys on the street running the gangs and that in Russia and in, you know, London and these places, they probably are, you know, clever enough, they could relate also. Because generally they don't have any problem. They didn't have a problem with Prabhupada. Right? You know? like that because he was so practical. They could see. They could see he was real. You know? So the point is that it's being from India, that's where the most qualified, intelligent people are. And then you have them in a city. And then a city like Calcutta. You know, it's like Delhi's new. You know, it's only been there since 47. Otherwise, it was a small place or some little villages, so they decided to make that the capital. So now it's become big again. Otherwise, it was nothing there. But Calcutta has been around for a while. You know, so those guys, there's a lot of time to get, you know, inroads into all kinds of things. So you have to be really, really clever. Does that make some sense? So we're saying that application is deism. Deism means where you separate the transcendental person from their functioning within the material phenomena and saying they can't do it because they're too transcendental. You know? Like that. Which seems like a glorification on one level. You know? Like you can say someone is so much in the mode of goodness. You know, conditionally, it's so much in the mode of goodness, they can't relate to passion ignorance, so therefore they'll be naive. Now that's true. But you're saying they're positioned superior, so therefore us on a lower platform have to deal with it. But there you're recognizing the difference. But in this other one, you're saying Prabhupada can't do it, so we're the ones that should do it. Not that it's coming from the platform that we're in a lower position. And our dealing with it is actually lower. You know what I'm saying? The other one you're saying, it would be, if we could all be saintly like this person, that would be great. But because we can't, therefore, you know, those who, you know, have that less saintly ability, you know, will take care of it. You know what I'm saying? So there's a difference there. It appears to be nobleness, but it's not. It's just rhetoric. Like that.
It's an insult.
Subtly an insult, because to them they don't think it's an insult. They actually sincerely think that they're glorifying. But it's not that the reason they're doing it is to glorify Prabhupada. The reason they're doing it is to get done what they want to do. And they don't want to insult Prabhupada, so they therefore... You know what I'm saying? So it's not that it's meant as an insult. We're just pointing out that it actually ends up that way. So that's why these things aren't recommended. They're not advisable at all. Yes?
Many people said that the argument that Prabhupada was also Grihastha and...
Prabhupada was Grihastha, yeah. So? So that's why everybody must be Grihastha. And then he took sannyas, so everybody should be sannyas. He was also Vanaprastha. And before he got married, he was a celibate student. He didn't have any girlfriends. And he went through college. You know? Like that. So, yeah. So if we're going to take the example, then take it. Why take only what you want from it? That's the point. You know, the point is there's principles at work and Prabhupada follows them. You know? He may have gone through the British education because that's all there was. But now that there's an opportunity to establish Vedic education, why wouldn't he? That's like saying, well, you know, how you say, you know, the big rich, you know, industrialist, you know, his father died when he was, you know, 12, and so, you know, he had to become the head of the family, and he had to work hard and maintain everything and all that. So now all of you, you know, so therefore my son, he should start off with nothing. And go out there and, you know, be, you know, have no place to live and this and that and, you know, and make his way up and become a man, right? Wouldn't that be the way every rich man would say, right? Or the rich man is, I was born poor, I became rich, but my son is born rich. So now I just have to teach him how to maintain that richness because he may not appreciate it as much as someone who didn't have. Does that make sense? Right, so to say, well, Prabhupada went to Karmi school. Yeah, there was only Karmi school. I've never heard of a Gurukul in Calcutta. Right? You know, it's not known for Gurukuls. Like that. You know what I'm saying? The around India, there's a few, but it's not one of them. So therefore, that's what's available, that's what he did. You know what I'm saying? So he got educated. So the thing is to use what's available.
That makes it even more glorious, all the obstacles and all the things.
Yeah, but as soon as there's something else, then he does that. It means, in other words, you know, it's just like you're on the train and all there is chili pakoras. You eat them. But with the next stop, if there's something else other than chili pakoras, you eat those. You don't eat the chili pakoras. You understand? So it's just due to attachment the devotees are using these things in that way. Now somebody is going, oh, you know, brahmachari, but as you know, you have to remain a brahmachari and you know, getting married is bad. Then you say, no, you know, Prabhupada got married and he, you know, engaged everything in Krishna's service and that. So it's not that, in other words, it has its place. The Prabhupada is a grihasa, so if so, you know, therefore it's not bad that anybody does it. It's not that it's a matter of you have to be, you know, grossly attacked. No, it's a matter of if that's the situation, the facility, then it's you, it's not a problem. Right? So it does have its application. But to say Prabhupada is a grihasta, therefore everybody should be a grihasta. Right? In other words, I'm miserable, and unless everybody else is miserable, then only I can be satisfied that there's no other alternative. Because if the brahmacharis are there, and they have no responsibility, and they're free, and they're happy, that's a problem. So let them also be miserable, then I can be happy in their misery. You want to avoid these kinds of things.
That's the poster for next year's Guru Panim.
Yeah, we can make up all kinds of funny posters.
Yeah, yeah.
And have them all so they come in. Yeah, and then this. Yeah. That would be fun. Yes? No?
Yeah.
Yeah, and somehow they have all these different things and when they contact because they're interested, and then they get you and say, you know, are you an idiot or what? This is not our philosophy.
The GBC won't be so pleased.
May not be. Yeah. But it would be fun.
Yeah.
Okay, we good? No, okay. When a living entity conditioned by this material nature begins the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, he elevates himself from the position of material existence. See, position of material existence and gradually rises up to the Brahman conception of the Supreme. Means the position being that in that position. Right?
Mm.
Like that. Because he starts to see God in everything. And so if it's God, therefore I can't enjoy it separately. I have to see it in relation to God, therefore it's devotional service. Right? This attainment of the Brahman conception of life is the first stage in self-realization. At this stage, the Brahman realized person is transcendental to the material position, but he is not actually perfect in Brahman realization. So perfect Brahman realization is Bhagavan, because Brahman is coming from Bhagavan. So that's actually perfect. So that's why we give these things, that this is the mode of goodness, but it's not pure goodness, right? Or it's Brahman realization, but it's not the perfect, the actual perfect, right? You know, or it's good qualities, you know, detachment, knowledge, and that. But it's the real detachment, real knowledge is everything's for Krishna and knowledge about Krishna, right? Does that make sense? So there's always that element that it's glorified because it's useful as a stepping stone to the actual self-realization.
This comes across in one purport in 18, verse 10. Prabhupada says, Krishna consciousness or the mode of goodness does not hate or
hate anything that can be done to the body.
Hate anybody or anything that can be done to the body. Right?
Okay.
And then he equates Krishna consciousness mode of goodness.
Mode of goodness, because it's the situation's the same. Because the Brahman platform is the mode of goodness. You know, or even in this case, transcendental. But all these good qualities, you know, patience, tolerance, you know, all this fortitude and all these different things, these are the mode of goodness. So it's a very useful platform. Someone on the Brahman platform automatically has it. Someone on the devotional platform automatically has it. It's just the right platform. Just like you want to buy a ticket to go to Delhi, and the Karmi wants to go to buy a ticket to go to Delhi. Right? But the place to go is to the window where they sell the tickets. Right? So the mechanics are the same. So the mechanics of the mode of goodness are useful, but it's not that it's what we're trying to it's not where we're cultivating. We're only using it because it's useful in Krishna consciousness. So we want to please Krishna. How to please Krishna? That means the results for Krishna. How will the result be for Krishna if I'm attached to the result? So therefore, detachment is useful. You understand? So I'm applying detachment, I'm cultivating detachment, not because it's mode of goodness, but because it's useful in devotional service. Right? But to explain its existence, I may have to point it out because of its being in the mode of goodness, just so I know what it is. Right? So just like you want to buy the ticket to go to Delhi for Krishna. Right? But I have to point out that, yeah, over on that side of the room, right? You know, okay. And then there's all those windows there, so the one that says this above it, that's the one you want to go to. Right? Does that make sense? You go there, say what you want, then they'll ask you this and that, you say these things, then you give them the money, they give you the, like this. Does that make sense? So the technique's the same, so you're pointing it out simply because it's useful. Not that, yes, the mode of goodness is that's it. No, the mode of goodness is the place to serve Krishna from. The Brahman platform is the place to serve from. But it's not the ultimate position. The ultimate position is defined by consciousness. Because everybody's situated in Brahman. There is no other. That means all there is Brahman. So how can there be anything else? But the point is if you don't understand that, you're an illusion. So that's your consciousness. You understand it's Brahman, the consciousness is higher. You understand Paramatma, it's higher again. You understand Bhagavan, higher again. Right? So, the point is being a reflection, that aspect of the reflection that's closest to being out of the material world is the closest to the beginning of the spiritual world. Right? There has to be some connection. It can't be that if you're on the Brahman platform, so therefore functioning in goodness, so when you go across out of the material world into the spiritual world, that there's going to be a difference. Otherwise, how would it work? So that point has to be the same. So the Brahman platform is the top within the material and the bottom within the spiritual. It's the common point. So that's why it's so useful. It gets you out, and it is the basis. Then on top of on that, then everything's done for Krishna. Does that make sense? The Brahman realization is already possessed by a person who is engaged in devotional service, right? So you're pointing it out and then showing how the devotee already has it, but the devotee doesn't necessarily know they have that tool. You know what I'm saying? So that's just like, let's say the person goes into the kitchen. It's his kitchen, but he doesn't necessarily know all the aspects of his kitchen. So you have to point out, okay, this is the counter. In the counter there's these drawers, and in these drawers and there's these things. You have knives in here, you have spoons in here, you have this in here. So you go through the whole thing. But it's still just the kitchen. So someone who owns the kitchen has all that. So they're separately studied, but at the same time as they function as one thing. So the devotee already has this, but he may not realize he does. So it has to be pointed out. But so we shouldn't mistake because it's pointed out, then it separately has its own standing, yes.
Maharaj, could you say that the Brahman, Paramatma, and the Bhagavan...
You have to speak louder.
The Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan positions develop simultaneously?
For the devotee, yes. For the non-devotee, not necessarily. The Brahman realization is there, then he may come to the Paramatma. If he's fortunate, may get to Bhagavan. That's only by the Lord's mercy.
Thinking of the devotee.
Yeah, the devotee is simultaneous because the point is where do we start? When you start preaching to somebody, where do you start? You start with Bhagavan. Then, to be able to technically work with it, then you point out the aspects of Brahman and Paramatma. Right? You know, karma, how it's working, you know, transcendence, you know, these qualities of goodness. They're all pointed out as tools of the devotee. It's already part of devotional service, but you have to know that it's there to use. Right? You know, just like the first chapters of Gita have already explained Buddha Yoga. Right? Does that make sense? But then these other chapters explain the technicalities. Okay, but you're dealing with the Lord, but how to see the Lord everywhere? Right? And then you have the last chapters that technically tell how the material energy functions so that you can use these tools of dealing with the material energy from the mode of goodness, right? With knowledge, that you can use it to advantage in applying the knowledge of the first chapters. You know, your third, fourth, fifth, and sixth of those four chapters. Well, actually, the second also.
It starts with the sun.
It means everything is God, right? But the manifestations of what aspect of God, that depends upon what aspect of the creation you're looking at. But he's a person. And the material world is only here because we as people didn't want to recognize him as a person. So therefore we get this place where we can therefore be in the kingdom of God, but not recognize you're in the kingdom of God. You know, just like a criminal, he's not recognizing that he is in the state and the laws of the state. So he's given a place within the state where he can function, you know, not really caring about the state. If he doesn't care about the authorities in the prison, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't change his position. It just maybe he ends up in solitary or something. You know what I'm saying? So it's just
a deeper manifestation of the state.
Yeah, a deeper manifestation. A very secure manifestation. You know, right? Does that make sense? If he wants, he can continue to stay in the Brahman position and then gradually rise up to Paramatma realization and then to the realization of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many examples of this in the Vedic literature, right? So it's one way to do it, that you're focusing more on the Brahman aspect. You understand the connection with the Supreme, but then go to the next, then to the next. The four Kumaras were situated first in the impersonal Brahman conception of truth, but then they gradually rose to the platform of devotional service. One who cannot elevate himself beyond the impersonal conception of Brahman runs the risk of falling down. Because otherwise, what will maintain it? Because the soul is active and has desires. So even when it's very well situated, it's not actually a situation. It means, in other words, Brahman, being situated in Brahman is natural for the jiva, because they are Brahman. But to be situated in an impersonal Brahman, that is not natural, because there has to be desire and endeavor. So material desire and endeavor is not natural for the living entity. Spiritual is. So the impersonal Brahman means there's no material, you know, identity and activity. Right? But it doesn't mean that they're spiritual. So that's why it's unnatural. So one will fall down. Right? They run the risk of falling down, because it's just at some point or another they will. Even if they make it to the Brahma Jyoti, at some point they'll come back. So that risk is there. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that although a person may rise to the stage of a personal Brahman without going further, with no information of the Supreme Person, his intelligence is not perfectly clear, because he doesn't actually understand that even though he is Brahman, it's all Brahman. But there's a difference between him as Brahman and... That's not burning the leaves, is it? So it's not such a good spot. So it's not perfectly clear. It's clear, but not perfectly clear. You know, that's the difficulty. Yes.
So one in the Brahman position, generally quite austere, and foregoes any activities of the senses.
Yes.
So when you throw
means about activities of the senses, because if we're just taking generically Brahman, if it's impersonal Brahman, it'll be from the mode of goodness, so you'll see that there's very minimal interaction. But if the situation is in Brahman because of devotional service, then their senses may take that lifestyle of goodness, or they may take another lifestyle where they're very active with the senses, but it's all in the Lord's service. So there's nothing mundane about it. In other words, in both situations, there's no mundane activity.
Right, provided there's Bhagavan realization on top.
No, even for the other, there's no material activity as such.
Right.
But without the Bhagavan realization or without that knowledge, then they won't be able to stay there for long because there's no activity.
Yeah.
They at some point have the desire to perform activity, and that activity has to be mundane because they don't know spiritual activity.
Isn't this similar to the point that Krishna makes to Arjuna? He says that you may go to the forest, but you're still incurring sin by eating out there. Mm-hmm. And so it's not purely sin-free. There's always reaction.
Yeah.
There's that Bhagavan.
Yes, until there's Bhagavan, that's why it's said. That's the only place where it's actually steady.
Yeah.
Like that. Does that make sense? It's the only place where it's actually steady. That's why it says actually perfect. So it's perfect.
Yeah.
Like when Prabhupada uses the term perfection, it means the liberated state. It means the Brahman platform.
Yeah.
But the devotee is situated in that, but performing devotional service. Therefore, that stage in devotional service is called Brahma-Bhuta. Right? So it's perfection, but it's Brahma-Bhuta perfection, not moksha perfection. So for us, technically, that stage is called Bhava.
Right.
You understand? So they're all the same stage.
Then, does that mean that the impersonalist is always incurring reactions from it?
He's not pursuing reactions. Because he's not doing anything. There's no reaction.
Yes.
The point is that there's no reactions, there's nothing. That's the problem.
But what about just like sweeping or eating bugs by accident?
No, because he's not doing anything for any material gain. So therefore there's no material loss either.
Okay. It's that,
you know what I'm saying? Let's say like the you know what I'm saying? So he's not incurring any karma. That's why he can be liberated,
right?
But he has to be, what's recommended, right? Because why would he do something not recommended? It means he has a desire, so he's doing something recommended.
Right.
So therefore, there's no reaction. But the thing is there's no transcendental activity either.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's only the activity of neutrality. So it's not enough to actually satisfy the soul. So at some point he'll have to, the desire to take up activity that has desire and need and interaction will arise. And so if he's cultivated Krishna consciousness, when that comes up, then there's so much opportunity for interacting with devotees. He may have been a bit aloof and a bit that and just does his duties and not get involved. But when it does come up, the devotees are there. So devotional service continues. He doesn't change anything. Right? But for the impersonalist, when it comes up, if there's no concept of spiritual, he doesn't have that, then he'll drop from the mode of goodness down in the mode of passion. Right? Because then he'll perform the same duties for fruitive results. Right, and then from that, then the mode of ignorance will come up. Because attachment, then mode of ignorance.
He doesn't have any results to offer to Krishna.
Yeah, there's no results. So there's no even knowledge that you would offer it to Krishna. All he knows is I perform the duty without desiring the result. That's all. I just do it. Whatever result comes, I'm not concerned with it. But the devotee is, the result's not mine. But what result does come is offered to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? It belongs to Krishna. So therefore, it cultivates the natural position of the jiva, the natural state of Brahman, rather than the neutral state of Brahman. In other words, there's a situation where you do something. Let's say I put you in the nicest, fanciest, most, let's say like this. Bring it down. So I pick the nicest room in Versailles, right? And I put you there. But there's nothing to do. You walk around, look at a few things, and this and that, and you'll be impressed by it for a short time. And then there's nothing to do. So it'll get boring. So even though it's the nicest room in the palace, you would like to go out of that room to do other activities. Because in that room, nobody eats, no one goes to the toilet, no one sleeps, no one does anything, there's no social... It's just the nicest room.
Mm-hmm.
right? But you want to read, you got to go to the library. You want to know what time it is, you have to go to that room. You want to eat, you go to that room. You understand? So, does that make sense? So it's something you pass through, because generally speaking, when they show like rooms there, or these big palaces, they show these rooms. One of the things you notice, much of the time, the room they show is the walkway. You know, it's the veranda. You know, because there's, you know, it's got the light, the big thing, the high ceilings, all the paintings, all the this and that. But it's not doing something. So something you can pass, you appreciate it because you're passing through there. But if you're told, okay, this is where you're going to live, hey, what about the bathroom? Sorry. You know. No, well, that's his space. Okay. Does that make sense? So he has to, because it's the nature of the jiva to be active.
Right.
So he will fall down. So that's why we say it's perfect, but it's not the actually perfect. It's not it's not the most perfect.
Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, is it possible to do philanthropic humanitarian work with complete detachment and attain to liberation?
If it's your duty, yes. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So if it's your duty, yes, but whose duty is it? Where does it come in? Where is it that you're gaining something? Let's say the brahmachari, he gains something, but the result's not for him and it's given it away. Right? What is that situation? You know what I mean? In reality, what's his duty that would encompass that? He goes begging. Right? So he's there's economic gain from that gain. But it's the teacher. So he just gives it to the teacher. Then the teacher collects from all the brahmacharis that's put together, and then the teacher feeds all the brahmacharis. But it's not his, right? Does that make sense? So the grihastha should be doing that, but if he doesn't, at least some portion of it, you know, he's supposed to give something for the Vaishnavas, for the temple, for some, you know, preaching or something like that. He may give something for other things, you know, poor people or some other thing that's, you know, there he has some connection with, or his mother died of, you know, AIDS, so he gives something for that, you know, research, you know, whatever it is, you know, so that's there, but that, and that's his duty, it's bigger. But you notice he means, if they recommend he gives 50%, the brahmachari gives 100%. Right? The vanaprastha, he's there, and then, you know, people will bring him so much stuff. So people who come and visit him, he gives it away to them. Because he doesn't need it all. So, you know, whoever comes next gets, you know, whatever this guy gave before. So it's just constantly turning over. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So the ashrams, it's their business to use and check. Sannyasi is supposed to be whatever is there, it's used for service. Right? And then you have of charity, the highest charity is giving Krishna consciousness. Because anything else, any other charity is, you know, a gain that gives some temporary benefit to the senses, you know, to the mind, or to the intelligence, but not to the soul. So Krishna consciousness gives to the soul. If you have that, then it automatically includes the others. Right? So that's the highest work, welfare work. So, therefore, taking it as a conclusion, yes, therefore you dedicated the rest of your life to preaching and teaching Krishna consciousness, you know, studying, preaching, and teaching Krishna consciousness, then that would be the very ideal situation to go back to Godhead. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. The highest charity.
Yeah, that's the highest charity. So that's why Krishna already includes all these things. So we don't, means the highest already includes the lowest, so we don't have to present it as a lower charity. You know what I'm saying? We're doing devotional service, and automatically the others, because they may not appreciate the transcendental, but they it's just like this. Let us say that you know, the Vatican had mass. Okay, I'm not saying that they do this, but I'm just trying to give an example. So, you know, rough. So, if the Vatican, then after that, then they consecrate their crackers and their wine. Okay, and those people who are there then took part. Right? Now, let us say there were people who couldn't attend the Mass, but they want to be able to get the benefit. So now you had some place there where people could come and get that. Right? So it's free. Right? Charity. But the point is it's a charity for spiritual benefit. Right? Now is anybody going to complain, you know, why are they doing this charity? It's just what it is. You know, we're Hare Krishna, religious people, so we do, you know, we do religious charity, spiritual charity. Is that a problem? You know, nothing else. If you can't explain, appreciate the spiritual, the guy ate. His stomach's full. So be happy. But the point is he'll be hungry again tomorrow, so if we give spiritual benefit, then... Does that make sense? So we deal with both at once. The material deals with one and not the other. The spiritual already includes the material. Because the material is a reflection. Right? If I say the arm in the mirror gets a bracelet, you know, but the real arm doesn't get one. Right? Because you hold your arm out there and I take the bracelet and blue tack it on the mirror. So now the arm has the bracelet, right? But does the real arm have one? No, because I move the arm, the bracelet's just hanging. So there's no real benefit. Right? Now, if I put a bracelet on the real arm, but don't put any bracelet on the one in the reflection, does the reflection get one? Yes. That's the point. That's how Krishna consciousness works. You deal with the spiritual as directed. The material is automatically taken care of. It means you see all living entities as parts and parcels of Krishna, therefore, therefore they're all devotees, whether they realize it or not. So you befriend all living entities. Now, there's the material aspect of being nice and presenting, interacting nicely with people come automatically. Yes. So, what's the problem when devotees go out and they're rough with people because they're karmi, you know, stinky, smelly, dirty, karmi, you know, on and on and on, right? Is that actually Krishna consciousness? Is that actually the definition of how you're supposed to deal? No. So that means they're performing Krishna consciousness, which is spiritual, but at the same time it's mixed with their material conditioning. Right? Because I'm doing it, it's great, you're not doing it, therefore you're schmutz. You know? Does that make sense? So that asset, that's material. Yeah? So that's all. It's just a matter of maturity. Then they start to realize that no. Then we'll come to the point, no, but we get better effect if we are nice to the people. So therefore we said, you know, we'll have a seminar, teach you how to speak nicely and everything like that. So now you'll go out and you'll preach and you'll be nice to them. Right? But has the actual personal realization actually there? No, the person's benefit, it was a spiritual activity, they got benefit, they came to Krishna consciousness. You got benefit for preaching. You've utilized this element of mode of goodness in the Lord's service, but you haven't realized that it's already part of devotional service. So that aspect of the philosophy that would bring that out, you're completely ignoring. So you're not getting as much benefit as you would. And because you're dealing with that, it's giving, you will see that because I dealt nice, that's why they're responding, not because the soul is looking for Krishna consciousness. Because back when devotees were rough and ready, more people joined than now when we're being all sweet and nice. The point is people want something real. You know, it's just like, okay, you know, I live here and downstairs there's, you know, a place that you can get food and it's not bad. You know, but I want something really good. Unfortunately, it's on the other side of town. Will I go there?
Yes.
So even though it's trouble, I'll still do it. So even though the Krishna consciousness may be a bit rough, if it's real, people will take it. You know, that doesn't mean it's all right to be rough. The point is it's the it's the realness of Krishna consciousness that works. Not that everybody was so nice and talked so nice. Because on the material platform, who talks nicer wins. And there's someone else always talking nice, and that's all they do, is talk nice. You know what I'm saying? They're hired because they talk nice. Right? So that's the point, is that it's useful. So in the beginning, it's okay. You know, you have to talk nicely to these people. You know, otherwise, they don't take up Krishna consciousness. So you'll see it from, okay, they don't take up Krishna. But you're seeing it from that point, which is good. They want to take up. But you're only taking it, you're only from the gain it gets, not from the actual culture. So you're looking at only from gain and loss or efficiency, not from the cultures. No, they're all parts and parcels of Krishna. You have to deal with them all nicely. But what about him over there? He looks pretty bad. He's been a little bit more, you know, he is stinking. You know, no, you have to deal with him nice also. Doesn't mean you have to give him a hug and a kiss. It just, you know, just means you have to, you know, be pleasant, you know. You know. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I committed suicide.
Huh?
So the guy who wrote the book committed suicide after.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He jumped off the 36th floor or something.
Oh.
Okay. He couldn't win any friends.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I'm saying here. The four Kumaras were situated first in the impersonal Brahman conception of truth, but then gradually rose to the platform of devotional service. Right? So that's what we're showing now, is that if he wants, meaning the devotee, he can continue to stay in the Brahman position and then gradually rise up to Paramatma and then to realization of the Supreme Personality. There are many examples of this in the devotional service. Right? So someone could go through it like that. But as we're seeing, I'm sure Krishna Prabhupada is going to bring out, much more efficient to work, use them all at once. You know what I'm saying? Because there it's using Brahman, then this, then that. No, we're using that. We're focusing on Bhagavan, but we're actually using Brahman. But we're seeing that in connection with Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because that's their consciousness. That's that mystic power. If you're, you know, the son of Lord Brahma, you have there's a few perks that go along with it. You know, flying in the space. You know, this guy, you know, can do all these things. You know, it's like whatever benefits you get on all the other planets that they'll have. So just, you know. Like that. So no, it's not something you put in the tube and market. So yeah. Yes.
Well, I'm confused about this word gradually, because I thought with the four Kumaras they smelled
something.
Tulsi
leaves.
Yeah, from the lotus feet of the Lord. And then I thought I understood, and then they.
No, but then what did they do?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Okay. Then they were contemplating. We're transcendental, so our senses are not attracted to anything material. Right? Because they're Brahman realized. It's not a matter of false humility. We're just talking facts here. So, therefore, we find this attractive. So, if it's attractive, we're transcendental. This is attractive. That must mean that there is transcendental engagement of the senses. You understand? So, if there is transcendental engagement of the senses, that means interacting with the Lord, that is also transcendental. It's not just part of duties. So one could, therefore, enjoy transcendental relationship with the Lord. You understand? So they're going through these stages. It's not like the gopis, they just saw Krishna and that's it. You know, they just love this guy. You know, they were going through these stages. It may happen very quickly. You know, but the point is they're going through those stages. Yeah, and they may go through it only once. Well, we have to do it, you know, regularly and this and that. Yeah, that's why it's sadhana. But they're already perfected. So then there's no sadhana in that way. Right? Their sadhana is then going from the neutral stage to prema. That's what Bhav sadhana is. Neutral stage of the soul being transcendental and then developing its love for Krishna. Right? Well, sadhana bhakti is getting rid of your attachment to the material and coming to the neutral stage, but that it's positive towards Krishna. Right? So that's what continues through, because otherwise if it's not done in connection with the person in devotional service, then when you get to the neutral stage, you'll stop. Right? Because there are impersonalists who have a concept that I'll use the process of devotional service, means the forms and mechanics, for impersonal realization. Right? But once they get to the impersonal point, they'll stop. But the devotee, when he gets to that point, he just keeps going. Right? It's a continuum. It's just you're trying to develop your love for Krishna. But at this stage, you're trying to remove your attachment to the material and bring it to the state, the liberated state. And then it's a matter on the liberated state now to bring it to the positive of love for Krishna. You know what I'm saying? Because when we say love, we mean the whole package. Because now we can say, no, but you know, sometimes I feel that love. Yeah, so that's there, but how often, for how long? So we're talking about 24/7. You know? So that means it's there, but there's more of the other. So that's why we say it's a practice. We're removing all that so that there's space for Krishna. Because it's all Krishna anyway, but we don't see it that way. So we've filled up the space with other stuff. You know, there's no need. Okay. You had something? Okay. Okay. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that although a person may rise to the stage of impersonal Brahman without going further with no information of the Supreme Person, his intelligence is not perfectly clear. Therefore, in spite of being raised to the Brahman platform, there is the chance of falling down if one is not engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. In the Vedic language, it is also said, Raso Vai Saha, Rasam Hye Vayam, Labdvanandi Bhavat. When one understands the personality of Godhead, it's fun. Just because I know this in the Vedic meter, but if I see it without the meter, I don't know it. You know. When one understands the personality of Godhead, the reservoir of pleasure, Krishna, he actually becomes transcendentally blissful, right? Because before he said happy. So that just means satisfied. We're talking blissful, right? You know. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7.1. The Supreme Lord is full in six opulences. And when a devotee approaches him, there's an exchange of these six opulences. The servant of the king, just thinking of the nerd, coming after the another person, hey, want to change some six opulence?
Okay. The t-shirt.
Yeah. The servant of the king enjoys on an almost equal level with the king. And so, because it's the same place, same everything, you know, the remnants are the same, the clothes means whatever's left over, you get that, you know, whatever was last week, that's what you're wearing. Right? You know. And so, eternal happiness, imperishable happiness, and eternal life accompany devotional service. Therefore, now, notice eternal happiness, imperishable happiness. Why would we use that? Because they would seem to be the same, no?
Because there's no gradation.
But increasing happiness.
Because eternal could be Brahma, imperishable, it's beyond.
The point is eternal means it's just you're situated there, you're happy. But imperishable means whatever happiness you got, it doesn't diminish. So that means you have, and then more it's just added to that. So that becomes your platform, and then more is added, it just keeps getting more. You know? And eternal life, you know, so in other words, it's not just Brahman, it's not neutral, there's actually a life. Right? So that's what we're saying. We're saying, get a life, right? that's the actual Christian consciousness, you know, how to get a life.
That's a good slogan, actually.
Yeah, that's another one of our boards. Yeah, yeah. Keep noting it. Get a life. You know, like that, you know?
Get your life.
Yeah. 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 don't just get a life, get your life. You could make some fun posters. So, eternal happiness, imperishable happiness, and eternal life accompany devotional service. Therefore, realization of Brahman, or eternity, or imperishability, is included in devotional service. This is already possessed by a person who's engaged in devotional service. You understand? So it's important because we will catch these endpoints, but our situation, our conditioning, means that's situated in the Brahman here. So that means we have to be, and we're actively dealing with that with Paramatma. So we need to understand how the devotional service already encompasses these two. Then our situation, our activities, are connected to the Lord. Right? Otherwise, we can connect the very obvious ones. Right? You know, you're preaching, or you're chanting japa, or you're offering an artik. Then it's very easy to connect those, but anything else, then that's where all the problem comes out. You know? Does that make sense? You know, so that's why then one has to be able to see these other two, because they're already included. Right? So therefore, the discussions about Brahman and Paramatma, understanding, then are already part of devotional service, but you have to understand where they are, so that those things can be properly understood and connected. Then one is always transcendentally situated. Yes. Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki,
Jai
Jainatai Gaurav.